welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 499. I'm Adam, and hungry. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Good Lord, color television!
And it's just us two.
Oh, what? Master?
I got interrupted master? Before I even got into the... That's unbelievable!
Well, no, I have to interrupt you because you've tasked me with things.
What? I have what?
When check I... recording levels.
We're a bit late when we've actually started the show. Go on then. Yes, I have actually, because I asked, do you remember earlier on, a few moments ago, off air, well, on air if you're watching on Facebook, I asked you if you could, you were doing your, can you hear me bits, and it was going loud, and I said
so
too
you
loud.
Were that, recording levels at that time.
Yeah, how, gotcha. Would you, how do you think I know whether it was too loud or not? I was watching, oh, never mind. Anyway, thank you. Very kind. Oop, I just, viewers will see that I've got the camera at a slightly different angle today, because I had very little time, because I had to work for an extra hour and a half today than I wasn't expected. So, and Deb wanted to order some stock for her business, and I was trying to do some work on some photos. So I did a wedding yesterday, and I've got to go to a funeral tomorrow, hence I'm going to try and hurry Kirby up for this particular episode. And the funeral's on the mainland, so that means a ferry journey and a long car journey. Well, it's not long to Americans, but it's about 100 miles or so, maybe a bit more.
Round, no, that's not long at all.
Round rural British roads to Kent, the town of Maidstone, the town of Strood, where my lovely Auntie Hilary will be laid to rest. So that's what we're doing tomorrow. So that, therefore, I'd prefer, if possible, to get an earlier night. So well, it might be a relief to our listeners to think that maybe that they won't have to listen to the whole show for 2 hours, because obviously this is the last
2 hours.
This is the last show before the 500th episode, which will not be part of the journey. It will just be the 500th episode, where we'll just have just me and Kirby probably again, because no bugger else cares about the show. We'll just be probably reminiscing about our extremely long time on the show. My particularly long, even longer time, and Kirby's almost as long time on the show. And then we'll probably seek some sort of counselling for having done the podcast for so long. And then I'll probably leave and retire from podcasting. Probably gone a bit too far there. But nay, we're going to talk about the Idiot's Lantern today.
We're going to finish the journey, I hope.
We've already done it, really. We've done all the episodes. There's no...
I know. It's going to remind you of episode 111.
Well, here we go.
Which was May the 7th, 2012.
Yeah.
Just over 9 years ago. Mm. We spoke about Idiot's Lantern. And you had to do something absolutely fantastical because...
what, I cracked?
Alpha Debbie came in the door and knocked everything over. What? And messed up the recording.
Good. No, what I could do, instead of recording the show, it might actually save me time just to find the archive recordings of all the other episodes and just drop them in, say, right, episode, watch this, and so forth. But at the moment, we're doing a podcast on The Idiot's Lantern, which begins in a very stormy night where Mr. Magpie is he's up late because he's got lots of TVs to put together because it's the coronation.
Master? No. He hasn't put any TVs together except for maybe one or two because he hasn't been influenced by The Wire yet. This is where The Wire actually starts the whole thing. This is several days before.
Yeah. Anyway, it's the coronation, and he's up late, and Noreen...
Not yet.
Oh, God's sake. It's not the coronation yet. I know that, but that's what this whole thing's building up to.
Yes, but he has to have time to build a whole bunch of televisions. And if you'll notice, with the next scene, the Connollys are still listening to the radio. They haven't got their TV yet. And also Granny's there.
Yeah, she is. Oh, oh.
Speaking of Granny.
Yeah.
Are you going to give the little bit about that, or am I?
Well, I don't quite know what you're getting at, so you better give
it
yourself.
This cat is in the way. Granny is Margaret John, who is in Fury from the Deep.
Who's she?
She holds, I believe... of all actors going between who were in Old Who and New Who, she's the second longest gap.
Oh, you both said the main same gap was
with the Queen Victoria from a few episodes ago.
Pauline Collins.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so there's a bit of a stormy night, and Lord Maury Nipman then starts sucking Magpie's face into the telly. Sting, title sequence. The Doctor and Rose arrive in what part of America was it supposed to be?
New York.
What?
It was supposed to be New York.
New York, that's right. 1950s New York, hence their garb.
They were aiming for 1957. They missed.
Yeah. And the Doctor rides out of the TARDIS in a scooter. Yes, he does.
In a TARDIS blue scooter.
Yeah. It's a rather clever thing, that, actually. Very brief, but it worked. Oh. Yes.
Well, if Robert were here, he'd interrupt with these same things.
Would he?
Because 9 years ago, he did the same thing.
Go on, then. That scooter wasn't available at a particular time or something like that. It's going to be, isn't it?
Well, that, but also this particular scooter, they had trouble finding a scooter that would sort of work.
Right.
And this one would not start. They even got in a stunt driver who was experienced with scooters, and it would not start. They had to do all sorts of things. The very few times you see it actually running is the few times they actually got it to roll. Other situations, they're just pushing it around and doing clever things like that.
If I go ow, 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 and crash, things go crashing, it's because I've got cramp. I've been up for too long. I've been on my feet for too long today. So I'm getting old. Where do we go? Well, we're still doing Doctor Who. And yeah, the Doctor comes out of the TARDIS. They just happen to be among these streets where, obviously, the rest of the story is going to be. Dad arrives at home, and you've got the new TV's been installed, and they're really unenthused by Muffin the Mule. Dad, however, is extremely enthused by Muffin, and Magpie delivers some stuff and bumps into the Doctor and Rose, and then some people in a black car turn up and bundle someone away.
Now, I'm wondering, I'm supposing that since Magpie dies at the end of this, that it was Tommy who took over Magpie's electricals, because we see Magpie branded
maybe so.
All the way up to...
We always thought there was going to be some significance to that, but nothing came about. Anyway, I did want you know the sort of yard that...
Don't you think it's neat that we see Magpie electricals?
Yes, I do, but I thought there was going to be... We thought at the time that was shown that there was going to be a link to The Wire and those forthcoming episodes of the show.
Oh.
But there wasn't. Anyway, did you not think the yard that the black car goes into is very similar to Foreman's yard?
Yes.
No?
And also the big blue van, which is blocking the street at one point.
Mm.
You see that?
Not particularly, no.
Well, you can see it in several scenes as they're chasing the black car. It says,
right,
B. Clancy and Son.
It does?
Yes, it's there because even though they asked the residents of the street to move their bleeding cars...
So I've got to really stretch my leg out before I get cramped. Oh, dear. I'll try if I can do this with my left hand. I'll just reposition the microphone. There we go. Because otherwise I'm going to get cramp. It's a very bad posture I'm currently, you know, doing at the moment. Anyway, so back in Magpie's thing, he's having a conversation with Maureen Lipman. I do love the shots from inside the TV looking out at him, where you can see her and him. That's quite clever.
Yes.
And... yes, then, of course, the next time we visit the family, Dad's a bit moody. He's been he's having a go at Mum, just as the Doctor and Rose arrive and ask why there's no decorations for the coronation.
Master, one of my favourite scenes is when they open the door and the Doctor and Rose go, "Hi!"
Yes, it's good. That was going to be one of my quotes.
Anyway,
so to cut a short story long, the Doctor notices the sexism of, and it was a period sexism because a lot of men were like that in those days, and comes up with a brilliant line. Well, the Queen's a woman. Are you not going to do what the Queen says? And of course, puts him in his place a bit. And then Rose bosses him around for a bit, and he does start putting the decorations up for a bit. And then, what am I doing? And then he sort of reverts back to his old self. And meanwhile, Nan is upstairs, but he won't let anybody see Nan. But they do go up there, and Nan's got a bit of a problem with her facial expressions. Basically, she hasn't got any. A bit like the faceless ones, eh? And you talked about the faceless ones and that woman.
No, I spoke about Fury from the Beat.
I was hoping I was going to get you with that one. I was hoping you were going to say, yes, I did. Oh, no, I didn't. That's right, but it was around the same era. They,
yes, it was. Some people have problems with this, Robert, with... How do they breathe? How they?
Yes.
And my answer to that is a science fiction fantasy TV program. It doesn't bother me.
He's tired. Anyway, so at some point, Dad punches the doctor out cold, just as the men in the black car come and take Gran away. And of course, at this point, they realise that he's dobbed in half the neighbourhood, which doesn't go down too well. Rose, meanwhile, has a look at the telly, and there's all sorts of sparks going on behind it because of its connection to the wire. Ow. The doctor goes on a little mission to follow the people in the black car and finds a cage full of people with no faces. And, of course, it's supposed to be quite a creepy, scary scene as they all surround him. Magpie then is visited by Rose, who, after sort of sussing him out, basically, is fed to the wire. But of course, the wire does have to explain what it's doing before sucking Rose's face.
This so very rapidly.
Is there a problem with that, Kirby? Have I missed anything?
How am I supposed to fit in on my pedants?
Well, your pedants. Right, well, run. Well, just do if we get to a point where you really do get in, if I've missed any sections that you want to pedant.
Well, where are you
over
right now? I was distracted having a cat.
I'm actually almost exactly halfway through. We got up to the bit where Rose is her face is being sucked off into the wire machine because the wire's hungry. And the doctor is doing
she gets her mule face, yes.
Yes, the doctor's got arrested, but not arrested, sorry. He's sort of being looked after by the men involved in this. You know, when
he broke into this little yard place. And by the way, have you noticed when he is sonicking his way into the yard?
Yes.
In the commentary, David Tennant points out that he's really embarrassed because he does a sonic, and as he's putting the sonic away in his pocket,
yes,
he accidentally hits the on switch, and so you see the sonic turn on as he's putting it in his pocket.
Oh dear. Anyway, so the doctor initially is sort of being interrogated by these two men, but then very soon gets on side with them. And then Rose is brought in by one of the little sort of henchmen. And he's really cross. The doctor's really cross now. He's going to really get them for that. For never mind all the other people, but because they've got Rose, he's going to get them.
Master, yeah, the doctor is cross. However, while David Tennant was acting to try and be cross, he was actually trying to suppress laughter, because and this is in the deleted scene section on the DVD and the Blu-ray. They put little dots for the computer for the CGI on Billy Piper's face, and she looks so silly that every time David Tennant looked at her, he just burst out laughing.
Understandably so. Anyway, so you go, and then that takes Rose out of the story, which is quite interesting itself. So the doctor's basically on his own now. And the party has started for the coronation. They've all the whole neighbourhood have gathered round Dad's house. I think this is what he wanted. He wanted to be centre of attention for the whole street. The doctor turns around. He's quite cross. He's swept his hair back, and Tommy comes out, and he has an argument with Dad. The doctor doesn't punch Dad in the face because he does owe him one after he received one earlier on.
Did you say that actor's in Coronation Street or something?
Which actor?
The one who plays the dad.
Yeah. It was EastEnders, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch those.
I don't know. I think it might have been EastEnders. He played a baddie anyway. Whatever he was in, he played a baddie. And I'm pretty sure his character died. So,
well,
Tommy goes...
when we last discussed this, it was 9 years ago, so the character probably wasn't dead then.
Tommy replaces Rose as the Doctor's companion for the rest of the story, and they go back to Magpie Shop and have a conversation with the Wire, who in typical Doctor Who villain style is going to take over everything and use the TVs to get into people's minds and take their faces off because he's hungry or she's hungry or it's hungry. So it tries to do it to the Doctor and to Tommy and the henchman, but the Doctor uses his sonic to cut off the link to the him and Tommy, but the henchman gets his face sucked off. And
some people don't understand, even though it's quite clear, that that's why only one person gets their face sucked off, is the Doctor was trying to prevent things from happening and was only partially successful.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
By the way, the actor who plays Tommy, Rory Jennings, how old do you suppose he was?
Probably about 23, why?
Yes, he was 23.
I get one of these.
Very good.
Anyway, where did I get up to? Oh, yeah, the Doctor Who things we're trying to talk about. Where did we go to? Oh, yeah, so the Doctor soon realises, because obviously they're in a bit of danger because the Wire has now got access to the television network. It doesn't affect every single person in Britain, because how many viewers did they say they were going to have? 15 million or something like that? I can't remember what it was now.
I'm not sure.
Pardon?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's not the whole population of Great Britain, so it would have obviously only affected people that were able to watch the coronation on telly.
Well, wasn't it one of the most watched
At the time,
of
course it was.
The 1950s?
Of course it was.
If you didn't have a TV, you'd find a TV.
And they filmed it as well, so people in the Commonwealth would have been able to watch it, or the what were they used to call it with Commonwealth in the old days? The Empire.
The Empire. The father in this, or is it the father or Magpie, says something about,
we're
no longer an empire.
But doesn't he say something like, for queen and country, or something like that? Which is the quote that we're going to see, you know, in the next series with Torchwood's...
No, at the end of this series.
Oh, it was at the end of this series, yeah. But, yeah. You know what I mean? It's the same quote, so...
Okay, here it is. Magpie says, it's my patriotic duty.
Patriotic duty.
Seems only right that as many folk as possible get to watch the coronation. Hmm. We may be losing the empire, but we can still be proud.
Okay, that's too much.
20 million people, they reckon, will be watching.
20 million, yeah. Still not the whole country. There's probably about 50 million in the nation in those days. So it's about a third of Britain. And what was I trying to say before you interrupted me?
I don't know.
Sorry?
I don't know. How does Magpie, how does the Doctor and Tommy get to the tower, to Alexander Palace, which is, by the way, in the wrong place.
Haven't got to that bit yet.
Where they are.
We haven't got to that bit yet.
How did they get there so soon after Magpie, when Magpie drove?
I haven't got to that bit yet. I was still trying to talk about the previous bit that I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sure it's quite important because I really wanted to say it. Now I forgot what it was. What were we talking about before you interrupted about the...
Probably Doctor Who.
No. Specifically, it's not like you to not be pedantic about what you were saying that interrupted what I wanted to say. I might have to rewind the doodah. I might remind
you. Yeah, you'll have to rewind it. It was right at... See, I thought
patriotic duty. Shush, I've remembered. Patriotic duty. Yes? Which is the quote that the leader of Torchwood says later in the series. Even when she's a Cyberman.
Yeah? Yes.
Hello, anybody there?
Are
you agreeing with me, are you? Well, I did forget... What if I did forget...
You're always right.
Well, I did forget to mention, of course, that through the help of the Wire, Magpie's created the first ever miniature telly, which and the coronation has started now, and there's some lovely old pictures the BBC did of the coronation, which they used sort of woven into this story. He's heading up the tower at Alexander Palace, which is basically the only TV transmitter in London, which I still think that would have cut down the amount of people could watch it anyway. Because I'm not going to pedant over that.
I've got a couple of I hope are interesting things about two sets. First of all, the set that that The Wire is being filmed in.
Mm.
She did that recording the day before the rest of the filming. But right. That set that she is in is in Alexandra Palace.
Wow, that's good then, isn't it, Kirby?
Yes.
Isn't that
Secondly,
exciting?
The set where the Doctor and Tommy are wandering around putting together the last minute stuff as the Doctor's about to go up the tower,
mm-hmm.
That is the very same set that it's been redressed that was the Are You My Mummy's room.
What? Oh.
Where the little boy was and the tape recorder runs out.
Don't be alarmed. You're just going to hear some old audio from...
My Mummy's room.
So, simply because it's the only way I can read any of the stuff coming through on the live feed because it's not channeling any of the comments coming through. And I apologise, anybody who said something to us. But I'm going to say it now. Lillian Robbins said hi about 24 minutes ago. Terry Marr said... That's very testing. I don't know what you meant by that. Andy
Probably
Nunny said...
My comments. That's the point, testing.
Andy Nunny says, evening. Ian Kirk says, at the end, the Doctor gives the scooter to Tommy, but recommends he keep it in the garage for a couple of years. That would be explained if the scooter was only made later. And then Andy Nunny says, is it just the two of you? Yes. Brandon Moore, sorry I'm late. I was having my face sucked off by the wire. I'm glad you added the wire by the wire bit. She's electric. And Lillian Robbins said, something in the way she moves attracts me like no other. Back to Doctor Who, hopefully. Right, so. Yeah, there was a mention of the mini telly being made of Bakelite because the Doctor, did he lick it or something like that?
He said it tasted
something or something rather. I have a Bakelite ring that was that my grandfather wore during the war, which had a picture, a very minute picture of my mother as a child.
Ah. I have a Bakelite little box.
Hmm.
That came from the second year of the 1933 Chicago World's Fair.
Excellent. That's a bit of a collector's item. I found my granddad's war medals, actually, if we're on the subject of... Because this is story set... Where's my granddad's war medals gone? Oh, here they are. As this story is set about 7 years after the war ended. And I was worried I'd lost these, actually, these war medals. But no, here they are. My granddad's war medals, which I suspect I talk a lot about Hereditary and stuff like that, Ben would probably scoff at, but there they are. My granddad's World War II medals. One is the Italy Star, because he fought in Italy. The other one is the World War II Service Medal, and the other one is just the whole, that's the World War II Service Medal, that one there. You see, I mean, this is only if you're watching on the Facebook, by the way, or not good for the audio listeners, but it's a silver medal with the King's head on it, and we got the Italy Star, which is this one, which is because he fought in Italy, and the other one is the 1939 to 1945 Star, which is the one, as you view it on tele, on the... left hand side, is it? Anyway, so that's my granddad. Slightly needs a bit of cleaning up and stuff, but that's his war medals. We're quite proud to be a possessor of these medals, aren't I, Kirby?
Yes, that's cool.
Right, so I'll pull them back in their little carrier bag that I've kept them in for the last few years. Must get them framed and stuff, and getting them framed and getting a little portrait of granddad in his uniform when he was in the war. All right, I've got a bit of a It's quite appropriate, actually, in some ways, to talk of my granddad on this show, because obviously the funeral I'm going to tomorrow is for his older daughter, my Auntie Harry. Brandon Moore says, this a 10th Doctor story, so of course it's Bakelite. And Bakelite, that's one of the best ones. That deserves a proper round of applause. Well done. I like that one. And Lillian Robin puts a load of medals up. Thank you, Lillian. So back to Doctor Who. Yeah, so Magpie's not particularly happy about climbing up this tower. Don't really blame him. And the Doctor and Tommy follow him. The Doctor goes into a little sort of control room.
That's the control room I was telling you that was actually from the Ninth Doctor story.
Yeah. And the wire starts laughing maniacally. While all these signals...
Maniacally.
Yeah, get beamed out and everybody starts getting their faces sucked off, and the Doctor climbs up the tower and sort of tells him not to do it and has a go at the wire, and then
Master,
what?
The Doctor also loses his foot at one point because it goes outside of the range of the CSO mats that are on the ground below him.
Okay,
so his foot disappears.
I didn't notice that, but thanks for telling me. Anyway, I forgot, they were looking for valves for this machine earlier on in the story, which was quite cool.
Yes, tubes.
Valves. And the one tubes. Was, Tommy found one which was perfect for the job. And,
that was so lucky, because I remember when I was a kid, when we used to have radios that had valves in them. I'll say valves for you.
Because they were valves.
And when you had to go and take them to Radio Shack to test them, and you never knew exactly what they were, and you had to figure out what they were. So Tommy's lucky he grabbed the exact right one.
Thank you. Anyway, the Doctor puts Pei to the wire by, I suppose, disconnecting her. And there was a video. What?
He records her onto
Betamax, yeah, and
Betamax,
and then Billy Piper. Rose reappears, and everything's sort of nearly back to normal, apart from Mum has suddenly become a bit authoritarian and kicks Dad out.
Good for her.
Yeah, and then there's a big party in the street, which everybody in Britain is hoping we're going to be able to do next year for the Queen's Jubilee. It'd be lovely to think that we could get tables and chairs and bunting out for all our little side streets and have 4 days off work, hopefully one at least, to celebrate Her Majesty the Queen, 70 years on the throne. That's
wow,
got to be
Pastor.
Worth it. Do you know, Kirby, that Her Majesty the Queen is the only person in the world to have met the last 15 presidents of the United States? He's been very quiet there.
I'm not surprised. It's awesome.
Oh, he said the Queen was awesome. Get one of them, definitely.
Of course she is.
Anyway, so also, not only is everybody back, the Roses back, Gran's back as well, and Gran's, obviously it's Gran's house, so they have the right to kick Dad out.
Bastard.
And there's a lovely scene in which, obviously, Tommy's a bit cross with his dad, but Billy, I keep calling... Billy, I'm talking about Rose, says, because obviously she feels the loss of her own dad, who she hasn't really lost because he exists in another universe, sends him off to sort of go and have a chat with him, and off he goes.
Well, I disagree with that. He's too bad of a person for him to have done that.
But, I don't know. Lots of people have bad dads, but they... You know.
But I want to point out that the scene of the aerial shot of the street.
What do you mean, the aerial shot as in of that great big aerial they had at Alexandra Palace?
No, the scene where we see the street party from a high shot.
Yes.
Two things about that. First of all, it's one of those things like they did back in Deadly Assassin, where they took everyone and they put everyone in three times. So you can spot three times.
Okay, well, I don't really want to do that. But
One baby carriage. Okay. Secondly, someone on the street had pictures of the very same party, the party for that happened on that day, on that street. And so they tried to put together as they tried to make it look as much like it did on that very street in Cardiff.
Thank you, Kirby. I'm surprised the Welsh were up for that sort of thing, you know. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says, pedantic comment of the week. The Queen didn't meet President Lyndon Johnson. She still met more presidents than anybody else, but thank you for that moment of correctness and pedantic.
Sure. Well, since he's the politician among us, I'm sure he's correct.
Of course he's Alan T. Butcher. He's correct. So that what did I thought of think of the story? I'm not majorly keen on this particular episode. It's very fillerish in my view. I like Maureen Lipman. I like the feel of it in regards to being the 50s and the old telly stuff. But it reminded me a little bit of that Fear Her episode in some ways.
No. Nope.
Fear Her was sort of set more modern times or slightly into the future at that time. But I felt it was a similar sort of setup, a sort of silly monster, sort of embroidered into a world event that everybody sort of knew about, the coronation. Obviously, Fear Her was the Olympics. And you had Hugh wasn't involved in that one. Anyway, it was okay. It's not one of my favourites, this story, I'm afraid. As Ben would say, what? Kirby, what did you think?
Well, an interesting thing about this one with Fear Her is that they were both recorded during the same recording block. They I don't know if they recorded this one before or after, but they were both recorded pretty much in the same couple of weeks. Secondly, I like this one, which is odd because I remember the first time I saw it, I disliked it tremendously. And I didn't see it again until we reviewed it 9 years ago. And it clicked into place. And I really enjoy this one. There's just something about it. I can't place my finger on it, but I like it.
Okay, you're allowed to. It's not so terrible that I'm going to, you know, go, because it's a sort of middling sort of story. Well, I'm not close enough to the microphone, so I do apologize.
By the way, Alan T. Butcher is correct. She didn't meet LBJ, and she didn't attend the funeral either.
Okay. Naughty, Her Majesty. Right, so now we can move on to feedback, and which traditionally on the show starts with your request for feedback.
Yes.
Oh, did Robert or anybody like that send anything in?
Robert.
Well, while you're doing that, I've got a wedding request has come through. Ooh, this is exciting. Carry on, Kirby. I'll let you do this bit while I do some business.
Opening it up. Hang on. Oh, what is your shirt? 2018 Isle of Wight Festival. Okay. See, I see that as I'm opening up Facebook. Are you all sitting comfortably? Let's see.
Thank you, Kirby. Right, then, new message.
Andy Nunny says, is it a double bill next week?
Oh, well, yeah, I answered that question, didn't I? Yes.
You answered. I answered before I realized it was our 500th episode. I reminded him that we always discuss two-part stories together.
We do, just so as I can finish the podcast 2 years earlier than I would do if we did it one episode at a time. Yeah, can't.
You remind Andy that it's our 500th episode next time, so we won't be discussing anything from the journey, just having a reminisce. And Robert Wentz Jr. says, LOL, so will Kirby have a fun fact from all 499 podcasts?
Well, that would be appropriate time to have one, Kirby. And I would be very disappointed if long-term fans of the show, Mr. T. Butcher and Mr. Kirk, and maybe even Mr. M., Mr. Nunny, who have been with us for quite a long time as listeners, and Mr. Nunny's case co-presenter, might not have a few memories over the last 499 episodes. So obviously they can't include memories of the 500th, because that's the one we're talking. Oh, carry on, Kirby. I'm losing
it. Mr. Nunny will just send in a single sound.
Well, we could work. It sounds like he's trying to pronounce Van Gogh.
Okay, Robert Wince Jr. says, talking about the Faceless Ones, second Doctor story, it's more of an invasion of the Body Snatchers than this one is. I posted the TARDISode, which shows where Granny loses her face.
Yes.
Robert Wince Jr. says, scary electronic circuits check. And Ben, his review. Robert Wince Jr. My review of The Idiot's Lantern. The Wire, an alien being with the help of Mr. Magpie to regain a physical form, needs energy from human minds using the cover of the 1953 coronation of Queen Elizabeth II from the TV audience watching the event. The people, when they lose their faces, look like autons. I notice that their hands ball up like in anger. And when I finish reading this, I have something to say about that. We get the men in black hats and black coats to take the faceless ones away. It's funny how the Doctor solved the problem with the Betamax tape in the end.
Not the worst thing Martin
Gittes has written,
yeah.
But it's boring as crap.
Excellent.
We get something similar with the 11th Doctor in the Vampires episode down the road,
yes.
With the Doctor climbing the tower. My rating is 2.5 out of 5.
Yes.
Now, speaking of their... doing that with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Gatiss was referencing Quatermass.
Oh.
Apparently that's a big thing in some Quatermass story or another. And too bad Matthew never joins us, because he would probably give us 23 paragraphs about what that is and everything.
Yeah.
Other than Ian's script, that's it here. I can read Robert's review.
Yeah, go on then. I'd like that.
Okay.
I'm still writing.
My short review. Not one of my favorites.
That's what I said.
It seems to exist as a comment on bad men. The Dead was written so poorly, it's as if they tried to squeeze in so many tropes of the bad husband. This man is a walking cliche. He's acted so over the top as to seem like a real... What? He's acted so over the top as to seem like a real well-rounded character. That doesn't make sense. That's what's written.
Okay.
The plot isn't up to much. And again, we have something that makes no sense. How do the people with no faces stay alive? They've no nose or mouth to breathe through. Never mind lasting for long with no food or water. And was it just me, or were you lot looking at the reflections in the Doctor's and Rose's sunglasses too?
Well, I wasn't. I didn't notice that.
I wasn't doing that either. And wow. Also, my response to Robert is a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it. Except you're about to send me Alan T. Butcher's.
I thought you were carrying on. Sorry, I'm trying to write an email to a potential customer at the moment. So I'm sort of treble tasking at the moment. It's quite impressive. Okay,
you should put on the elevator music.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, I've got another customer who sent me an email. I haven't missed it. It's today she sent it. Okay, we've got some audio feedback. While the audio feedback is playing, I shall try and send you the text that you are requesting. In the meantime, it says download.
You should be prepared ahead of time.
Cool, right, hang on, that means I've got to play it in a different way. I wonder why it's done that, but maybe it's updated its firmware. Whatever it's called. Right, downloads. Now, I've got to be careful not to stop this thing from playing. But here it goes. Come on, hurry up. Sorry, the dog is snoring in the background if you want to...
It's never too late, as a wise person once said.
Oh, sorry.
Kindly, I think. Good afternoon, 20 Megabyte Podcasters. It's Mr. M here with some feedback for The Idiot's Lantern by Mark Gatiss.
What did you hold up?
This is probably just going to be quite a quick one because I don't have a lot to say about this story, mostly because I'm not a big fan of this story. I think it's pretty crap. I don't have a problem with the ideas, but I feel like it's a bit overstuffed. The family and all of their kind of stories, I never particularly care much about them. I like the 1950s tortured style.
Yes.
Stuff. And I wish that if the story had focused on that element of things, it would have been a lot more engaging, a lot more speedy. Maureen Lipman's okay as the Wire, but she's not a particularly great villain. I like the face-sucking thing, but they didn't do a lot with it. It would have been more interesting if they actually did something rather than just standing around kind of like featureless Autons. Mr. Magpie is a pretty lame. The whole coronation thing is a bit trite as well. It's okay. It's not terrible, but this story, when it was first broadcast, it was the first story that I actually had the mind to record on VHS. Oh. I know it was 2006, but, wow. You know.
Very retro.
I've always been a bit low-tech. And I watched that story a lot over and over again up until I got the Series 2 DVD.
Yeah, you should have requested some sort of counselling.
Yeah, watching it over and over again didn't warm it in my affections.
No, really wouldn't do.
I don't really have anything to say other than that. I like Billy Piper's dress, though. other than that, it's, yeah, it's okay. Probably Mark Gatiss' weakest script.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
A certain Dalek story. Next week, though, I'm going to be much more excited and enthusiastic because it is one of the best Doctor Who stories of all time.
Yes, the story of the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. It is definitely the best Doctor Who story of all time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
You interrupted him, though.
I'm not interrupting. I was just adding comments. So I wasn't interrupting at all. It's called skilled, experienced podcasting, that is. Right then. I couldn't copy and paste. Oh, I just dropped my phone on the floor. I couldn't copy and paste anything for you because I was in fear of the recording stopping.
I could tell you then in the audio Hunters of Earth, in October 1963, the first Doctor visited Magpie's Electricals and attempted to buy components to repair the TARDIS.
Oh, yes.
In June 1964, the Magpie Deluxe was on sale in London in Wave of Destruction audio. In July 1966, an advert for Magpie Electricals was in Gatwick Airport in the Faceless Ones.
Well, the real Faceless Ones?
No, the animated one.
Oh, okay, right.
In 2007, the logo appeared when the Doctor flicked through various websites on a mobile phone in The Runaway Bride.
Right.
Martha Jones had a Magpie brand television in The Sound of Drums.
Okay.
The microphone that one of the singers on the Titanic, the alien cruise liner Titanic, was Magpie brand, Voyage of the Damned. Wilfred Mott had a Magpie television in Voyage of the Damned.
Oh.
Torchwood 3 had... No, that's a prose, so it doesn't count.
How long is this going on for?
Apparently, Sarah Jane's computer, not Mr. Smith, but her just regular computer, was Magpie.
Yeah.
In the Mark of the Berserker. in the Lie of the Land, you can see a Magpie electrical shop. And all sorts of things in the 11th hour TARDIS console room had Magpie. it goes on.
Yes, it does. Yes. Right. Now, where do we get up to? Oh, What?
Was the first time in the Beast Below was the first time anyone noticed the continuation.
Okay, right. Terry Miles says, "This episode, we find the Doctor and Rose on a sanctuary base on a desolate world."
No, that's
next week. Sorry. Where's this week's? Here it is. This is going back a bit. Written by the fanboy Mark Gatiss, this is not always a good sign. Some of the stories are great and some are, well, not so great. I found this one to be one of the bad ones. It's odd. It seems this was written with Eccleston's Doctor in mind. That makes it start to feel a little more understandable. That's a good point, actually. Arriving in 1953, wanting to see the King, Elvis, but as always, they land in the wrong place. They are in London, where they are preparing for the coronation of the new monarch. Now, I expect it, the TARDIS decided they go to London, because the TARDIS yes. does that. TVs are rare, but becoming popular in a few people's houses in anticipation of the coronation. Now, I was wondering, you were talking about the coronation and the party in the street. Well, surely that was the Coronation Street, Kirby.
Well, I do have a bit of trivia about that.
Oh, no.
The street, they do name the street in the story. I think I'd have to look it up. But apparently that was the original name of the street that they eventually called Coronation Street in the pictures for the program that became Coronation Street.
The villain played by Ron Cook, Mr. Magpie, is okay, but the real baddie is The Wire, Maureen Lipman. A TV talkback to you is a normal thing nowadays, but in the 50s, a bit creepy. Hungry, hungry. A little weird as she eats people's faces and leaves their bodies. The Connolly family are a typical post-war family. The father, Eddie, is played by Jamie Foreman, lording over everybody, thinking he's still in the army. The mum, Rita, who is played by nicely by Deborah Gillett, or Gillet, depending on how you want to say it. Son Tommy, played by Rory Jennings, who appeared as Craig in EastEnders. Why are the TV aerials shaped like swastikas? That's a good point. MMM Rose's mum went out with the sailor. We see the Doctor's anger again when Rose falls foul of the Wire's power. Great to see Ali Pally again. Did he mention Kylie now prophetic of him? Again, it's not a bad episode, will it? It's not a good one either, is it? It's just an underwhelming one. That's a perfect word for it. Next up, Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, which was actually the story that was on when... I'm pretty sure it's that one. It may have been the story that was on when Isabella was born, when we were in the hospital, we watched Doctor Who. A funny feeling this was the story that was on. I may be wrong. If it was June 2006, I'm sure Kirby's just about to find out, this is Isabella's birth story.
Something else.
Stay safe and well, Linda and Terry Miles. Pardon?
Yeah, Florizel Street, which that's the street which this story is supposed to be taking place on, was the original name of Coronation Street in the scripts written by creator Tony Warren in the autumn of 1960.
Thank you for that, Kirby. That was well worth waiting for. I'm hoping that this bit of audio is going to be loud enough to be heard. Oh, why is it saying download again? Kirby, Chrome is annoying me now. Right, well, before I do that, I'm going to finish the emails about to send to someone. I can't finish the email. Darn it, because I can't remember what I was going to say. What am I using Chrome for? Because I use Chrome because I had so much trouble with Safari that I gave up on it.
That Apple is supposed to be the best ever.
I've learned over many years to ignore your rather sort of unwarranted attacks on Mr. Jobs' creation.
And I'm the one who had...
Well, good evening, 20 Minute Writers. It is quarter to six on a Sunday afternoon. I'm just running a bath. It's that time of year, I suppose. I thought I'd just give my feedback to the English Lantern, which I watched on Friday, actually, doing the ironing. I quite enjoyed it, actually. It's not... Yes, I mean, there were a few plot holes in it, but I think the most interesting thing I got out of it was, at the moment, according to a COVID-idiot friend of mine, we're all being lied to by television, you know, there's no coronavirus, all a hoax, you know, this is a guy who believes that David Icke speaks the truth and that the earth is flat. Yeah, I think we know what sort of person that is. But it's just interesting, the fact that his television is being used as a weapon. The problem I had with it was, I thought it was a very good concept. I thought that so many people would have been packed around the television, as did happen, because it's quite true. A lot of people did get their first television sets for the coronation. But it's only going to take about 20 million people out. That still leaves about 20 or 30 million people in the country. So I'm not quite sure she going to take out everything around the whole wide world, or just in Britain, or what? That's
just
the thing
Britain.
That I didn't quite get.
Just
the Britain.
Was
playing, and I missed it completely. But the concept of an alien race, you know, parasitical alien race, living inside electronics, actually, it's quite fun. I'm sure it's been done before, but actually, in a way, you could see it happening. And I think the slavish devotion that people do have to it's more just TV now, of course, it's streaming. I mean, you know, you see people glued to their phones. They're still looking down at his phone now, checking the cricket score. Kirby, what's the thing of this match so far? What are you interested in your view? The fact that, you know, people are so slavish to it, and it could, you know, this could happen. The other thing I didn't quite understand was how do these people survive? Because they've got no faces, so therefore they've got nowhere taking any sort of nutrition. Now you can survive 6 days without water. I didn't see any life support or anything. And I think in 1953, there wasn't anything like that. So,
fiction, these fantasy, people ought to be
dead
program.
In a week. And yeah, this has been going on for, I'm guessing, several weeks. So why aren't they all dead? But other than that, I think the content itself was good when you got someone being taken over and manipulated, you know, desperately hoping that he's going to be freed. I mean, he must have known himself that he wouldn't be. I mean, you might as well stick a red shirt on him. Poor Mr. Magpie. But, desperate people do desperate things, and that was his vain hope that he would be released. Of course, Magpie Electronics did come back in a future episode, didn't it? Rose was in it for about half the episode. I thought the way she and the Doctor worked together, pretending to be, you know, Crown agents, I suppose, to work quite well, and not literally smacking Connolly, but certainly giving him what for in terms of, you know, he hadn't got his decorations up, and he got him upside down as well. And then actually trying to go and find herself. I mean, she's got some guts, hasn't she, Rose? To go and find out the Magpie. Then, of course, she gets stuffed out and stuck inside a television. I thought that was quite good the way they did that. You know, the people screaming, saying, help me, help me. She says, doctor, doctor. Tennant, love the quiff. I mean, you know, he really could carry it off, couldn't he? I think, yeah, we're in Vegas, with London buses. So, yeah. Either thing, he's got into the wrong place. But you know, Rose didn't seem to be too disappointed. I think once she worked out where they were, and they were going to be part of history. And also, it's an interesting social comment. I think after the Great War, certainly when the women came back and would be working and, you know, kept their jobs, got the vote eventually, I think after the Second World War, you had more of the same, where women were coming more into their own. The fact that she stood the ground, you know, the house was in her mother's name. So I'm assuming that, well, probably similar, you know, to what people did in those days. I mean, my parents got married in 1955. They moved in with my mother's parents and eventually took on the house. My grandmother died before I was born and never met her. But they then became the homeowners. So I suppose that's what happened here, is that they moved in with her mother after she got widowed, got married. But he, you know, he's been turfed out. And I suppose in those days, the stigma of divorce would have been quite high. But for a woman to do it and turn around and keep the man out, that's quite an interesting one. So I think it's an interesting social comment there as well. The bystander characters, the bishop, the police inspector, you know, he got convinced very quickly about the fact that the Doctor was on a good side, you know, with a good guy. You know, suddenly he said, "What's happening? Oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing." And he just suddenly sits down and takes it all in. Interestingly, he never identifies himself to Connolly as being a police officer, does he?
Mm.
You know, when he's coming out and stamping around and his son comes out and basically takes over. I mean, he really was a very weak character, but I suppose, you know, a lot of bullies are, you know, they're making up the fact that, you know, they've got such weakness anywhere, they have to try and get it some other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is at the end with the father-child relationship with Rose, knowing what it's like to, you know, to lose a parent. It's what she would have been, well, she was a baby when her father died, so she never knew him. And, you know, I guess in the series, she's about, what, early 20s, I'm guessing?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then 19. Tommy, I think he must have been, what, about 15, 16, there or thereabouts? You know, he's going to stand with his father, but don't, you know, she's saying don't lose that father-son relationship. You know, things may change, you know. Relationships with all our parents, you know, change throughout the years. So I miss mine like heck, I really do. But, yeah, I think enjoyed it. A few plot holes. I think the way it was set up was good. I think the special effects were good. Stormageddon sat and watched it with me, and he wasn't frightened again. You know, I'm quite surprised. He didn't get fazed by it at all. And then he said, yeah, he was, yeah, jumping up down. He even knew, he realised, you know, he recognises who the Doctor is, he recognises the TARDIS. I think he knew that the good guys had won. So there you go. And anyway, Ben, what is the answer to that quiz question? Because we've gone from 9 to 22. Be seeing you.
Thank you, Andy. That was Andy Nunny.
Yay.
Pardon?
I said, yay.
Oh, I love it. Right, I wonder if I can finish that email now. Oh, hang on. Have I got any other stuff that came through from last week?
Yeah, what about Captain Kirk?
Oh, well done, Kirby. I had nearly forgotten. It's only because I got another window open. There's me priority jingles. So, with that in mind, let's find Mr. Ian Kirk's audio. Oh, actually, where is it? Oh, I've had to scroll down the page. It's this one. Yes. So, here we go. Oh, would you believe it? Guess what?
Download.
I must remember that in future.
I don't want
you to say it again, Andy. Right. I don't know, it's going to be difficult doing the jingle and then playing another audio, but I'm willing to try anything once. Here we go. See if it'll work. No, it doesn't. I'll have to do it like this. Here we go.
Hello, Talking Magmat Podcast, is in Kirk. The Idiot's Lantern by Mark Gatiss. One of Doctor Who's occasional horror stories. Maureen Lipman. She's usually a comedian.
She is.
1953 is before we were born.
Yep.
I do remember them always playing the national anthem before closing down for the night.
They did at the end, right when I was a child.
Rose refers to the Union flag being upside down.
Yes.
This is not possible if it is without a flagpole. They did intend for the Doctor to refer to that time he fell off the Forest Project dish and regenerated, but deleted it.
Yeah, oh, that's a shame.
The Wire ended up on US television, sort of. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. That was Ian Kirk.
There were, like I said, with the Quatermass stuff, there were lots of references in the script to Quatermass, and all but the clenching of the fists were dropped.
Right, Kirby, here's your big moment. You have some blurb from Counselor, Alan T. Butcher.
Little shop of wires, or the wire must live, but you can't beat a Betamax. Dear 20 Megabiters, The Idiot's Lantern is, of course, a closely studied examination of the dangers of the television medium and making people tend towards being passive and conformist. Furthermore, the manipulation and exploitation that this powerful medium affords an active bad actor is exhibited via The Wire. The Doctor defeats this menace by use of a method of recording which hands power over what they watch and when to the viewer. It should be noted that while some might point out that nothing to do with The Wire, nor her victims, nor her vanquishing, nor the restitution of her victims makes any scientific sense. In fact, after all, Doctor Who is a science fiction fantasy TV show. Yay! We also learned that the audio young Davros actually started out in the 1950s with an overbearing father before being magically transported in a big finish to the Khalid community on Skaro with an incredibly overbearing family. All in all, The Idiot's Lantern is a disappointingly cartoonish representation of attitudes in the 1950s. The splicing together of plot elements of Little Shop of Horrors and The Hand of Fear, which, by the way, was the first Doctor Who Kirby ever saw. I forget the date. I can look it up. With a logopolitician-style ending, should have been promising. The episode does successfully set out to show a further step in the Doctor's degree of obsession with Rose and Rose's mounting overconfidence, which are central to the season's narrative arc. However, the central performance by Jamie Foreman as Mr. Connolly is hard to bear, even though most of the others are very creditable. There is some charm in the final resolution of the situation involving recording the villain onto a Betamax tape and then recording over it, as long as you can ignore the grisly murder this constitutes. However, there are a lot of convenient plot contrivances,
yeah,
which stretch credibility.
Holes.
such as the weirdly elaborate and unlikely police state nonsense practiced by the authorities, which seemed totally out of place. All that said, on rewatch, I did not feel quite as much that the mean-spirited evaluation of the early to mid-1950s period was quite as bad as I remember on first watch, and I can't say it wasn't reasonably entertaining. This story is perhaps one episode too long, as who would want to see a better episode like the ones around it instead?
Yeah.
Next up, Doctor Who and Sutekh's Hole, or Ood Omens. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Butcher.
Now, you know what he's referring to with Sutekh's Hole.
Yes. Okay. We can talk about that next time, but it won't be next week, because, of course, we'll be talking about us next week. I've actually got the old theme tune for when we do a milestone episode, which I may play next week or not. There's some stuff coming through on the live feed, and we have, let's see if I can go back to the last thing I said. Maybe, this is Brandon, maybe if there's just two of you, you could do a quiz and Kirby can cheat against himself.
No.
Alan T. Butcher says, the Queen didn't meet President Lyndon Johnson. I've already said that one. Is this going in the opposite order? Terry Marr said, sorry, Adam Pearson sent next week's feedback too early. Alan T. Butcher says, and Mick Robertson from the show Magpie on ITV had a similar hairstyle to Tom Baker. That's going to go right over the Americans' heads. Alan T. Butcher says, Florizel Street. Is that all right for you, Kirby?
That's the street that I was, that became Coronation Street.
Yeah. Lillian Robbins says, Andy talks too fast sometimes. I can't always understand him. I've heard that before. Oh, hang on. I've closed down my priority jingles folder, and I need to get it back open again. Eh?
You shouldn't close it down.
No, I did it by accident, Kirby. Yes, there's not very often that I make mistakes on this show, but occasionally I do, and that was it. So. I feel that didn't quite go how I wanted it to, so I'm going to play it again. Tim Drury says, I'm hungry, only kidding, I've just had a KFC. And it's funny you say that, I actually got a KFC Funko Pop from Heroes, iwheroes.co.uk, because I do like KFC, and I think that Colonel Sanders is quite iconic. Just thought I'd say that, just to drop in a little mention.
I haven't eaten KFC in ages.
Haven't you? Have you not?
It's probably been 2 or 3 years since I've had KFC.
I'm not keen on the boned KFCs anymore. I do like the boneless chicken. It's delicious. And I'm not getting any money from KFC for that particular plug. I just wanted to mention it because it was a plug for iwheroes.co.uk, who sell the iconic Colonel Sanders Funko Pops. Back to Doctor Who! Robert Vence Jr. says, a hi all, or the two of you, is everyone on vacation? No, nobody can be bothered to be on the show. This is what's going to be interesting to see, who can be bothered to be on the show next week when we hit our 500th episode. I am predicting that if we ever get to 600 episodes, we won't reach 700, because we would have done all the Doctor Who stuff by then. I've had to work it out to be about 625-ish, like that, which we would have covered everything. Anyway, oh yes, Robert Vence Jr. says, the didn't like VHS, or they, I think it meant to say they didn't like VHS. That's why it was mentioned a Betamax. I think that was a tongue-in-cheek thing about Betamax. There was another video format around in the 80s called Video 2000. That didn't make it either.
In fact, if you look at the Betamax, when the Doctor pops it out of the recorder, he's recorded other things on there and crossed off the titles.
Right.
But the titles are all written in Gallifreyan.
Thank you, Kirby.
And they probably actually say something, but I don't know what.
Okay. Anyway,
I can look it up.
I often get, because I one of my jobs that I have as part of the business of APV Services, you remember that? APV Services?
Yes.
In association with? That's the APV Services. What is my business? Which is photography, videography, editing, and transferring old-style retro things to digital files. Now, I get mainly Hi8 and Video 8 camera tapes and VHS tapes. But somebody did actually ask me if I could convert a Video 2000 tape to digital. And then I looked up Video 2000, because I'd never actually heard of it, and found that if you wanted to buy a player to achieve this, it's going to cost about £300. So I said that to the person, well, customer, yes, I can do this, but you'll have to pay me £310 for doing it. So there you go. Anyway, but yeah, so that's probably the only medium. I did do some old movies, Movie 8, no, what they call it, cine camera. That was quite charming, so seeing the Isle of Wight in the early 70s. But I didn't keep the projector because I was given the projector by the person who wanted the conversion done. But I'm tempted because they're not that expensive. But I'm quite busy.
Are you aware of the YouTube channel Isle of Wight Archives?
Matt? The what?
Are you aware of the YouTube channel called Isle of Wight Archives?
I think I... That's one of my subscription channels. But there's a Facebook group called Isle of Wight Heritage, which posts some charming old photographs and posts from the island. And that's one of my favourite groups on
Facebook. Yeah, I do
actually
plan to visit sometime.
Do you know? What else we got here?
You're not looking forward to that, are you?
Of course I am, Kobe. Don't be so silly. Alan T. Butcher says, Marco Polo was probably on that Betamax tape.
Marco.
Neil James says, oh balls, wrong thread. And then he says, Idiot's Lantern, Maureen Lipman was great, but Doc and Rose are peak annoying. Blank Faces look good. Toxic Masculinity storyline is okay. 1950s setting works well. Long drawn out finale that fails to excite me. It's all right. Sorry, I'm a bit drunk. Kisses, 2 out of. I suppose there would have been a 5 there after that. And then he said, oh, balls, wrong thread. And he said, I'll just put it in the feedback post. Sorry, I'm hammered. Should be probably in a garden somewhere with Mr. Nunny and the dreaded dressing gown. Yes, thank you for that, Neil.
Well, this is interesting.
Is it? Wow, this is a first, Kirby. I'm thrilled.
You realize this was written by Mark Gatiss,
yes,
who has written both some very good stories and
some very bad ones. A bit like Chris Chibnall, to be fair. No, Christopher Chibnall has written some very bad stories and very bad stories. Carry on.
This story had one of its working titles was Mr. Sandman.
Right.
Which became, he used that for one of his worst stories ever.
Yes.
Also, almost every shot in this episode is shot at a Dutch angle. Mm-hmm. That is I always called it Batman style, 60s Batman style.
Yes.
Except at the very end, every shot is angled.
I suppose I didn't really notice that. They sort of...
In Batman, you used to see it when you'd see the bad guys.
Yeah, like, I know, I remember that. Joker, but that was quite clever, because I didn't notice it in Doctor Who. Well done.
Because you know why they were doing that. Because they were crooked.
Okay. Right, sorry. I'm just going to look up Toby Haydoke, because I'm pretty sure he posted something interesting that could be referred to as news. Let's have a look. Because I'm going to now talk English at some point when I put my teeth back in.
What about whowon.co.uk?
Yep, they sell stuff. And so do lavazi.co.uk. Stuff good. That's quite interesting to Doctor Who fans and more. But I am going to look down this list. Oh, yeah, we had the passing of... Oh, wish me luck with this one. Damaris Heyman, who was very old. She died at 92, but she was in the third Doctor story, The Daemons. And yeah, she'd been around for, she was until a couple of years ago, still doing the convention circuit. Didn't know that, did you, Kirby?
No.
Apparently a chap called Roy Scammell has passed away. I don't know what his relationship with Doctor Who was.
Oh, Damaris Heyman was the, she played the kind of witch of the village in The Demons.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, yes. Oh, you know who I'm talking about now.
Yes.
Splendid. That does help. And he reported on the 11th of May, still acting in films at 100 years of age. Good for you, Norman Lloyd. Now finally on his way to Great Dressing Room in the Sky. What a terrific fellow, though. What a career. You've got to be healthy in mind and body to work as an actor and make it to 106. I don't know if I've got any Doctor Who references, but it's quite a nice little article by Mr. Haydock. In fact, why should I bother with Doctor Who News.net when Toby posts links to his own podcast and Doctor Who News anyway? But Doctor Who News, the doctors behind the scenes, after the success of the compilation of Mythmakers interviews featuring the doctors and their companions, Time Travel TV are releasing a new 13 DVD collection, this time focusing on the behind the scenes heroes and heroines that brought Doctor Who to life. Each release will feature over 5 hours nostalgia, aiming to provide a whole new insight into the making of the series. It's quite interesting. But it did remind me, actually, on UK Britbox, which has so much Doctor Who interviews, and I was actually watching one with Jackie Lane before I forgot that I was watching it. I must go back to watching that one. I've never seen an interview with Jackie Lane. So it was done in, the interview was done, I think, in the late 70s or early 80s or something like that. But there's other interviews with other Doctor Who people that are no longer with us, which may have been done through, you know, that company that used to make dramas with the actors of Doctor Who in the 80s and bring them out on video. It was those people that did these interviews with the actors from the 60s and 70s of Doctor Who. So
I'm looking at my version of BritBox, and
not on there, is it?
We've got the Doctors Revisited. Got That's the new. San Diego Comic-Con Doctor Who panel.
Yeah.
And
it might be the Doctors Revisited, because there's a lot of little mini episodes and things on it.
Let me take a look here and see.
While you're doing that, I'm going to say new paperbacks from Penguin Random House. Wonderful Doctor of Oz by Jacqueline Rayner. That name rings a bell. Legends of Camelot, also by Jacqueline Rayner, and Team TARDIS Diaries Volume 1 Paper Moon, written by Louis Stowell, and Team TARDIS Diaries Volume 2, written by Ghost Town, written by Susie Day. Candy Jar Books, Return to Fang Rock, by Andy Furcombe Allen.
But they're all dead. How
beautiful cover. No, no, but that's what the book, the remit of the, it was like a graphic novel, but it's really quite cool. The Lucy Wilson Mysteries, The Keeper of Fang Rock, which are like a, I don't know what that is, it's like a female version of the Fourth Doctor, is the picture on the cover. And then they talk about Damaris Hayman, the 25 years of Doctor Who News. Today marks the 25th anniversary of Doctor Who News. It was on the 30th of May 1996 when Canadian fan Shannon Patrick Sullivan made the following announcement on the rec.arts.doctorwho news group. Oh, that's interesting. Trailblazers, Dealer Derbyshire. We did that last time, so I'm not going to do it again.
Yes,
so yeah, that's Doctor Who News covered. Yes, Kirby? No?
Wait.
Yes? Yes? No? No, no, yes.
No, wait.
I thought you were looking something up.
Okay.
No, I've already mentioned whowon.co.uk. I don't think I've got anything new on it on from last week, and I wanted to make this episode short. Latest products: Nightmare Realm, Doctor Who Magazine, 565, Ruby's Curse.
Doctor's Revisited has.
Are you there? Yes.
I remember these all came out as specials just before the 50th anniversary. There's seven of them, seven things, one on each of the classic Doctors, and then a bonus feature, Tales from the TARDIS. What else do they have here?
Right, you've got 5 seconds. Five.
San Diego Comic-Con panel, and something called... Oh, they have the Five-ish... Oh, the Five-ish Doctors is on BritBox.
Well, watch it then. I think our BritBox has also got the HD version of Adventures in Space and Time. So, right then, where did we get up to?
Arms has that too. Let me look.
What? Right, did anybody watch Loki?
An Adventure in Space and Time is also on the US Brit Box.
Splendid. Did anybody watch the first episode of Loki? That means me and you, because only me and you on. Actually, did you watch the first episode of Loki?
I was going to, but the person I usually watch these things with, that is Julia, was not available.
Oh,
so I could not. I'm not allowed to watch without.
Well, you like spoilers, don't you? What happens is, funny joking. Right then, I'm sweating now because it's so hot in here. Even the dog's passed out. Next time, I'm presuming it's next week, if everything goes to plan, we're going to be doing episode 500. If anybody would be kind enough to send in something nice, something commemorative, I would appreciate it. But I'm not holding my breath, because it's never happened over the previous 499 episodes.
You've never held your breath?
No, I'm not expecting anything, but it would be nice just for once, because we're nearer the end of the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast than we are the beginning. In fact, a lot nearer the end. Oh. So at some point, it would be nice to get some appreciation from our fan. But anyway, so next time, episode 500, please join me and whoever can be bothered to turn up. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Right.
You're supposed to say scarecrow.
No, I am not. His head is pouring with sweat. Alright, live video's ended. Better turn the thingy back to normal on that one.
Spot well, maybe we should start reminding people about next week.
No, like, I'm not doing that. People should be... no, don't do that. I'll be interested so you can be bothered to turn up for it.
But then, see, if I actually put something out there to remind people...
Yeah, no, well, that's... No, Kirby... I do your normal feedback commemoration, whatever you call it, but just say, next week we will be commemorating? Is that it?
So when do you want me to post that?
Well, in normal time, like... just see if people can actually notice and can be bothered to do anything about it.
Like, I normally do it on Saturday, but I was thinking of doing it a little
not
early.
Not even Russell T. Davis could be bothered to turn up for that, and I did ask him, and they gave me a little bit of hope about him, you know, when I asked about 6 months ago, that if I asked a bit nearer the time, because I did say that we're big fans of Russell, then his agent woman said, oh, he might be able to do it, ask me a bit nearer the time. So I asked a bit nearer the time, and what a surprise! No was the answer.
Yes, I'm a big fan of his compared with later.
I love Russell. I think he's great. He's the
I am so enjoying seeing these ones again. Even the worst ones of the RTD era are better than most of
Absolutely. That's what I mean. These are like the they almost make me feel like, I don't know, it's just like the bond between me and the some of the Marvel stuff. I do like a lot of the Marvel stuff, but I particularly love the last three Avengers films and the Guardians of the Galaxy, because they've got such a, even though there's baddies in it and stuff like that, they've got a really good rapport between the characters. The actors obviously love playing those parts. The special effects are good. As backwards of timey-wimey stuff, especially in Endgame. And there's comedy and there's darkness, and it's those sort of five films of the Marvel Universe franchise. I absolutely adore them, and I feel it's a bit like that with this era of Doctor Who. They've just got a lovely blend of comedy, great characterizations, trying new things, especially, you know, with the Doctor and his slightly more humanness. And they sort of explain that away quite nicely with the fact that he had to extract the time vortex from Rose and must have sucked a bit of Rose into himself, a bit like the Dalek did. So again, that's like it's almost like a synchronetic thing when the Daleks had a bit of Rose in it and the Doctor and had a bit of Rose, not in a sexual way, but you know what I mean? I just loved all that. It got everybody thinking, so it was subtle. Got people thinking about how these things work, and because Doctor Who fans like to try and make sense of things that don't make sense, and that. But when it gets a little bit too not making sense, Stephen Moffat, then things became a little bit more annoying.
There were some good Stephen Moffat stories, it wasn't as consistent as the
RTD. There's been good stories all the way through, and it's not been consistent. Every producer, even Chibnall, there's some absolutely banging stories with the 13th Doctor, but it's just so disappointing as it's so seesawish. You get a really, really good one.
If I were a Doctor Who fan, I would really, I'd probably not be watching the Chibnall. Have to watch it because I'm a Doctor Who fan.
No, I think a Doctor Who fan will watch it, but I still feel it's got very watchable qualities. I also feel that watching all those stories once, I know we watched them a couple of times for the review purposes, but actually sitting down and watching them, we're going to get more out of them. And I'm looking forward to some instances watching the Matt Smith and Capaldi era, because I really have only watched them once with a view to enjoying the story. And I feel I'm going to pick up on things I didn't pick up on before. And I also remember most of the stories really enjoying them a lot the first time, and then thinking about them afterwards, thinking, actually, that's a bit stupid. No, I don't like that. But I do know.
I think that happened with a lot of Matt Smith ones.
Yeah, but the Matt Smith era, that was absolutely fantastic ideas, and the River Song thing was brilliant, and there was some, and I loved Karen Gillan. I don't know whether I loved Amy as a character, but I still do. I'm really looking forward to meeting her at Wales Comic Con.
Sort of conversation we could have next week for the 500.
I did forget to mention about Billy Piper being at this year's Wales Comic Con. I'm going to be absolutely thrilled to bits to meet Billy. So it's stuff to look forward to. I'm not majorly looking forward to watching the 13th Doctor stuff so close from already watching it, but we've done that before as well. But it's going to be nice in some ways watching
be a little while before
watch
we get
these new Who's things running on and on without the gap in between series. So watching them, it'll merge, one will merge into the other. Sort of seeing characters I've almost forgotten about to a certain degree, like Bill and Nardole and Rory and various other characters that have popped up, during the Moffat era, which I say, it was a bit annoying, some of Moffat's overcomplication of things, but it was still a good era. And Chibnall's rubbish, but like I say, thankfully, not every story of the Chibnall era is rubbish. Rosa is just a masterpiece, in my view. Again, it's not perfect, but it's almost a masterpiece story. And there's some lovely work. You know, you look at the first, when the return of the Master in Spyfall and stuff like that. Really, really good stuff. But it just, all it did was it sort of hung a worm in front of the fish of, oh, this might be a really, really good series of Doctor Who. And of course, some of it was and some of it wasn't. So it's that thing with the RTD era, about 75% of it was really good and 25% wasn't. I got that watching Voyager. I got that watching Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek the original series. It is not possible for every story to be of 100%.
Yeah, I'm slogging quality. My way through original Star Trek original series with Fred. And I'm having a hard time with the third season. And not, I kind of want to go.
Yeah, the third series is a lot darker. It's a lot darker, even lit darker than the first two.
And I want to tell her, can we skip this one? Can we skip
no, this one? Watch it. Are you watching the HD version?
She needs to see them all, yes, so we absolutely. Will.
But are you watching the HD version?
Star Trek. Whatever's on Netflix.
Yeah, that's HD. I found that absolutely mind-blowing, seeing all these characters in high definition. But this is where you do notice the very dark lighting, and you know, especially the dark stories, the darker stories.
The one thing I don't like about those versions is when they redid the special effects, they often changed the design of some of the ships, like the ship that Khan was in Space Seed. And to me, it's not right, because I saw all those stories when I was 12. And they look a particular way to me.
Yeah.
You know what I was doing when I was like 13, 14 years old?
I dread to think, Kirby.
I had a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I was recording the sound onto reel-to-reel.
Yeah, that's what I did. That's what I did with Star Trek. I found that when I went to visit my cousin in Newcastle when I was about 12, 13. Yeah. And she had a cupboard full of these audio tapes, and I remember when I was sleeping at her house, I had her room and she had the other room, and she was a big Star Trek fan, and she showed me the Star Trek Action Group, and she showed me let me play some of her audios of the Star Trek original series that she'd recorded off the BBC, and then I went and did exactly the same thing. I'd record Star Trek off the telly with a microphone.
Yeah. I memorized them all.
Yeah. And loved it. And then I got the photo novels, the whole set of the photo novels.
Yes,
and I was really disappointed they only did 12 of them, because then I'd play the audio and flick through the book, because obviously you didn't have the video of it. But I still love Star Trek. Never won't. Well, I must get round to watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because I actually stopped watching it around about series 5. So there's loads of it I haven't seen yet. So I must pick up that at some point.
I finished that, but I haven't seen Enterprise or Discovery.
I think series 3. I stopped watching Enterprise. I have seen the last one. I thought that was quite cool, because there was a link up with Riker and Troy in the last episode. I thought the way they worked that one was really, really good. It's very sort of Star Trek of that era. It is almost like Doctor Who in the JNT era. It's a bit sort of up its own bottom, whereas modern Star Trek is a bit more. It does sort of pay tribute to the earlier Star Treks, but it's a bit more. It's in the world, and this thing happens. It's different, you know, like Star Trek Discovery. You know, it doesn't seem to be able to go rubbish. I think there was one poor episode in the last series, and there's hints they're still making another series of that. And of course, Picard is coming back as well at some point. So lots
what
of good
is
Star
that
Trek.
Noise?
That's it, Star Snoring. She's got Andy Nunny's disease.
Hang on a second before we stop. I wanted to show you a picture. Here, I'll send it through Messenger. Let me get there and find you there. Well, if you've seen this picture before or not,
let's have a look. Don't remember seeing it.
That was my room when I was 12.
Oh, right. Mine would have had pictures of Annabella Lewin all over it. Didn't have any Star Trek stuff. But I'll tell you what.
Pretty pathetic.
there's a new Funko Pop coming out of Kirk in his chair, the Enterprise chair. I'm absolutely itching to get all my hands on that one, to be fair. So iconic.
You'll notice there's even a Tribble in the corner at the lower right of the picture.
I've got a Tribble. It's snoring over in the corner there. Anyway, right. I've got to go because I've got to have a bath and I've got to be up, get tired.
When do you want me to ask for feedback?
Is it the same day you normally do?
Saturday.
Yes.
Okay.
Tutty bye.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk, and iwheroes.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.